Mini-episode 164 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by DOU Productions, delivering coverage of sports and pop culture through columns, live blogs, and original videos. Follow them on the web at generationchatter.blogspot.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
All right, another edition of the FDH Lounge, mini-episode number 164. Rick Morris here, being hosted at a hospitality from Matt Pinfield here at MTV2. Very pleased to be able to have him with us and simultaneously be hosting us today. Matt, thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, Rick, great to see you. You know, I'm sorry. It's funny. I was coming from a meeting downtown, and just to explain to everybody, we're right here at 1540 Broadway in New York City. So coming through during rush hour to get here, it's like, you know, trying to swim upstream with salmon or something. Because, yeah, let's face it, it's like there's so many people in Times Square. Mm-hmm. And, you know, God bless the tourists because, you know, they bring money to the city, obviously. And people like to have them here. And it's part of the New York spirit. But when you're trying to get from point A to point B, which may just be one block, It is definitely like fighting a crowd, leaving a baseball or football game walking in the other direction.
Well, it's unreal. My first time navigating it, actually, Matt, getting here, you know, in Times Square in rush hour, coming here from, ironically, talking to you, the rock and roll capital of the world, Cleveland. First time of Times Square rush hour.
Yeah.
Quite a scene.
I love Cleveland, by the way, too. I mean, you know, The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I was so glad it was back there this year. I thought it had a great energy, Rick, because, You know, they actually sold tickets and let a real crowd be there. And They actually had a real red carpet outside where, you know, people could, you know, see artists and people that were coming in. But more importantly, the fans of the bands that were nominated or the performers that were there, you know, their fans could be there. Because, I mean, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed the ones that I've seen. I haven't been at all of them, but I've been at a few at the Waldorf Astoria here in New York City. But it's different when it's just a table full of people and there's no fans, like a crowd around. So I enjoyed it in Cleveland.
Yeah. I mean, I commented on it in the local media, almost sort of being treated as though it's obviously not on the same scale, but almost as though it's the area's Super Bowl, that every 3 years you have, you know, all the big-time folks from the music world convening on there. And there are, of course, some controversies in terms of who's in and who's not in. And with another gentleman that we've had on the show, actually friend of yours, Eddie Trunk, that I believe was a topic of our discussion when he was on, some of the folks who aren't in there. And that leads to its own set of controversies. Personally, Matt, my favorite group, Rush, not being in there is something that has greatly outraged me.
Well, I hope that they get in there sometime because, I mean, I've been a huge fan for years. And it's funny because I was literally just out watching the 60s band The Zombies two nights with Cliff Bernstein, who, you know, manages, you've heard his name, he manages Metallica, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Muse, ton of great bands. And, you know, he's actually the guy that's responsible for getting Rush their American record contract. But the place that it was actually being played when he brought the import over to the station was in Cleveland, MMS, back in that day. They played Working Man off that first record with John Rutsey as drummer. Oh, sorry about that. That's one of my friends.
No problem.
My phone always goes. My phone will, like, undoubtedly, guys, you'll laugh. During every interview I did on my morning show here in New York City at 101.9, that damn phone would go off. And I was with Serge from System of a Down the other day, and I'm like, hey, it's not a mad interview of the damn phone doesn't go off.
Hey, we're talking to Matt Pinfield. It's to be expected. No problem.
But I was going to say, you know, I was talking to Cliff about this, and I brought up the story he had told me years ago when he worked at Mercury Records in Chicago. But he had, you know, Cleveland was a place where Rush broke out of, you know, Working Man being played there. And he put a sample together that I had a sister-in-law who managed a record department at a department store called Corvettes in, like, the 70s and 80s. And there was a sample that came in that had Rush, Fly By Night, and Anthem, because Fly By Night had just come out. And Thin Lizzy, the Nightlife album, Showdown and It's Only Money. And I remember loving those, both those, and then going out and buying the second Rush record, and then going back into the first, they're just a great band. That eventually you gotta let these great these bands in. I mean, Kiss is another one people argue about. You know,
You know, and it's funny, Matt, that you mentioned MMS, because me, whenever I'm talking to folks on the show in a transparent attempt to try to, you know, build some sort of camaraderie with them, I'm usually the one that invokes MMS and growing up listening to it, because there are so many folks in the music industry that had such an appreciation for it. Bruce Springsteen being another one also, too, that I don't know that they were necessarily the station, but they were one of the stations that helped break him also, too. So it's just amazing the appreciation that folks have for what was just about one of the most innovative stations anywhere.
It's a great station. And one of the guys who was really important there, Kid Leo, and I worked together at Columbia Records. When I came back from working for Jimmy Iovine and doing that whole farmclub.com thing, which was, you know, an innovative idea. Now you see Jimmy, of course, you know, he's part owner of Beats Headphones with Dr. Dre, and, you know, he owns Interscope Records, and, you know, you see him giving advice on American Idol. I mean, I don't really watch American Idol, but I know that he's given advice on there, and I've looked up from doing, like, you know, my syndicated radio show and say, oh, look, Jimmy's up there. But I did a TV show for Jimmy called farmclub.com, and which was really cool. It was like a website, a TV show, and a record label. It was a great innovative idea, but nobody had broadband. And so Jimmy always says to me, he goes, Matt, he goes, nobody really had broadband yet. We were just too early. But I thought about when I moved back, I went to work at Columbia Records to do A&R there. And who did I become friends with who worked there was Kid Leo from MMS. And what a great guy he was. And his daughter's actually in the music and entertainment business now as well. She ended up working there. I think she started interning and right out of college. But Leo's great, and he had great stories about radio in Cleveland. And then you hear other people talk about how he helped break artists there and was really behind a lot of people.
Yeah. It was a tremendous story of what happened. His old boss, John Gorman, who was the boss of the entire place, he actually wrote a pretty good book on that in the last couple of years. I was fortunate enough to be able to read it and learn a lot about the scene there. But it's always, of course, like I said, good to talk about the music scene with you, Matt, with everything that you've got going on. And with your return in the last couple of years now to 120 minutes, I got to imagine it for fans of alternative music. You're probably hearing this a lot that, you know, it's probably a great feeling of, you know, throwback to how it used to be, being able to watch you on there again. And I'm going to guess that a lot of the modern rock folks feel like all is right with the world, that they can catch you on there again. But what's it like to be able to return to that format in that show?
Well, it's been fun. You know, it's there it goes again. And this one is actually from England. So let me just answer this real quick. Hello? Hello? Alex, it's great. Listen, hey, Alex, where are you now? Are you in L.A.? Yeah, I'm doing an interview, and I'm going to call you right back. Is that cool? I can call you. I'm in the MTV offices, so I'll just use their phone. All right? All right. My friend is, my friend, he's the guy who signed that rock band Biffy Clyro. You might have heard of them. The great band from the UK. Heavy band that are really cool.
Okay.
He's actually the real guy who found the Killers, too, and turned me on to him when I was trying to sign him.
Really?
He's a Brit who found an American band from Vegas
on
a cassette in Austin. So there you go. And although he didn't get to sign him because his boss at the time didn't really hear the record, he's a brilliant A&R guy. And, you know, he's out in L.A. right now working on a record with Biffy, with that guy, Garth Richardson, or they call him Garth. Great producer. He actually calls himself Garth because he stutters. So he goes under a name, like kind of like, you know, like kind of poking fun at himself. But his dad was Jack Richardson, who produced all the Guess Who hits, like American Woman and all that classic 70s and late 60s stuff.
Really runs
so it's
in the
all,
family.
Yeah, a lot of family stuff. So we'll get back to what you were talking about for a minute. Yeah, I mean, 120 minutes, you know, I'm proud to be a part of the history of that franchise. And it's a weird word to say franchise, but I mean, for me, it was all about the music, and the show was about exposing new artists and up-and-coming artists and artists on the edge. So it was very exciting, and it's great to be back in that fold as well. You know, and I also do a podcast for MTV Hive. It's on MTVHive.com and iTunes, called The Hivecast with Matt Pinfield. So the stuff that you'll see, you know, with 120, this takes it further into straight-up interview, like your show. That you do, right? And so that's a lot of fun to do. 120 was always near and dear to my heart and still is. So, but it's so good to hang with you guys, man. Thanks for weathering the storm of Times Square madness. I was thinking of you guys going, I hope I get to these guys on time. I was coming out of the two train in Times Square, and then just swimming against the people.
Well, yeah, it's quite an experience, like I said, especially for somebody like me that hasn't dealt with it before. I don't think good old producer Steve Cirillo is batting an eye at it. I think he's seen it all before, but New experience for me, Matt.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you made it up. Steve and I run into each other at a bunch of events here. Billboard Touring Awards I was hosting. I ran into Steve there. And then the Big Vision Awards, too, which was a cool night for me. I got to dedicate that award to my dad, which was passed away. So it was cool. And he laughed before because he asked me where it was, Steve. And I said, I said, it's in my kitchen. But my kitchen's a cool place. You see,
yeah.
He was laughing at me. And I'm like, dude, no, Steve, here's the thing about that award. I mean, it's great there because it's out right in the open. And I spend more time in the kitchen because, believe it or not, I'll tell you what I think was funny is my girlfriend said to me, she's like, you know, you put the turntable and you put the music stuff in the kitchen. Well, it's a big kitchen. And then she read that Billy Joe Armstrong's wife was kind of, you know, saying, well, Billy Joe's stuff. Billy Joe was saying how he puts his turntable and his music in the kitchen, too. So she didn't think it was so strange after all.
Well,
Billy Joe Armstrong does it as well. There you go.
See, yeah. You're copying off of somebody else who's very successful as well.
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing with Steve, I don't know if we've ever told this story on the air or not, but he and I were in an event last year. Ripper Owens Tap House down in Akron. We went down there. It was something that Eddie Trunk and Don Jameson were on, and both of whom we've been fortunate enough to have on the show. We're looking to get return engagements from both. But he bumps into Don at a lot of these things around here. And so for him to be visiting me out in Ohio, Don Jameson sees him. First thing he says is, what the hell are you doing in Ohio?
And he doesn't realize that's where you're originally from, though, right? Steven,
no, just he was just there visiting me.
New York, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, that Don recognized
him. I thought maybe you lived there for a little while. No, but Ohio's a rock and roll state.
It is.
I mean, there's a lot of country fans, too, which is fine. It's cool.
It is.
There's country, like there's, because I actually worked at the, in Columbus. You know, they have a bunch of concerts there in Columbus.
That's a great radio city.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then I was there, believe it or not, doing like interviews for DirecTV years ago at the country concert, you know, kind of off-camera interviews in the back.
Uh-huh.
But it was, they were like, they flew me out to do that after South by Southwest. And they're like, you do country too? I'm like, hey, why not, man? I mean, I'll interview artists or artists of, you know, especially if they're coming from a real place and
yeah,
they love their music and they're performing. There's a lot of different genres of music. And when I did that show for Mark Cuban on HDNet, Sound Off, which is actually airing again now, like in the wee hours of the morning.
Wow.
Or as Frank Sinatra would say, in the wee small hours of the morning.
Yeah.
It's airing, you know, now on Axis TV, which was HDNet. Now,
okay.
That's the one that Ryan Seacrest and Mark Cuban are working on together, and there's a lot of concerts there, but they're rerunning my old interviews from 2004, 5, and 6. I had like one of the first high-def interview shows with musicians, and it was, I mean, you'd have jazz guys on there, you'd have country guys on there, you'd have, you know, Lou Reed to the Killers to Hall & Oates. I mean, it was a very diverse show, and I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I enjoyed doing it.
Yeah. I mean, that crosses a lot of lines, just the names that you mentioned right there. And again, yeah, I mean, and Columbus is a place with a very interesting musical scene also. So I went to school not far down the road from there in Athens, and we used to hear a lot of great music from the Columbus area back in the day as well. So, yeah, that's, you know, you've worked in a couple different areas with great music, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. You know, and you know, you've got the whole history of Akron there, too, of course,
yeah.
with the Pretenders and Devo. And
now the
you know,
Black
and
Keys.
Of course,
yeah.
Black
oh.
Keys now. And yeah, and Joe Walsh. People back in that area that,
mm-hmm.
And it's amazing because I actually have a friend who was there on the front lines during the shooting at Kent State. Literally, he now works in the music business and would retire for a while, just got back into it. But his picture is in the, if you open the yearbook for Kent State 1970, he's like right in front of the confrontation. And you know who else was there in the audience? It was Chrissy Hynde of the Pretenders and the Devo guys.
Really?
They were in school then.
Okay.
So they were actually there at the same time. So all these musicians were there for that actual really sad and crazy event.
I didn't know they were there then, but it's funny because, you know, living in the Cleveland area, one of the Devo guys does a commercial for Kent State because it's a thing where he's dressed, like, completely differently, and he's just talking about Kent State. And then at the end, they throw up the Devo picture, and that's who he was. So, you know, but, yeah, he does testimonials for them as an alum. I didn't realize it was 1970. Okay.
Yeah, well, those guys, you know, you got to think, I guess, if they first started putting out singles in 76, 77,
okay.
You know. Well, they were like, you know, because they formed before that. But,
yeah.
You know, in England, they were on Stiff Records originally, and then they came out here on Warner Brothers.
Okay.
But they told me some great stories about how they used to got, get played not, You know that whole pay-to-play thing?
Uh-huh.
They used to tell me they sometimes would get paid not to play. Which was great. I love that. I wish we could all walk into some place and they would pay us not to perform. I mean,
yeah.
Hey, I'm stopping by your place. Here, take some money not to do anything today.
Yeah.
Well,
I think that's how punk rock worked back in the days, right?
People because Devo, they were so creative and so cool and so different.
Yeah.
But you can imagine that some people saw that and just didn't know what to make of the whole de-evolution concept.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Records, though, and it was a lot of fun.
Well, it's funny because Steve and I were talking about this today on the old Staten Island Ferry about some of the roots of music and what you would consider with alternative. I mean, would you consider some of the roots of alternative to be like that 1970s punk? Is that how you kind of see
big
it going?
Time, okay. Yeah.
All right.
And even 60s garage rock.
Okay, that too.
There's a lot of great 60s garage rock.
Okay.
And some of the British invasion bands. I mean, obviously The Who and people like that, early Stones. I mean, all that stuff influenced, the whole punk thing too.
As far as what you're seeing now with doing 120 minutes versus when you were doing it then, obviously there's a sea change of difference in terms of with YouTube and ways that a lot of these bands get their music out there. So, but in terms of the styles of music, in terms of some of the musical scenes of today versus when you first started doing the show, what are some of the big similarities and differences in your mind?
Well, I think the similarities are that people are always still looking for, different things that aren't in the mainstream completely. You know,
okay.
I mean, there are artists that will cross over and artists that will start on a show like 120, like everybody imaginable did back then, from Nirvana to the Smashing Pumpkins. The Soundgarden, I mean, and some of those bands started at, some bands would start on Headbangers Ball. They were all over the place, but usually it was a launching place for a lot of artists. And then once they started to make it, some of them would stay in that genre. Some would get astronomically big.
Mm-hmm.
But what I still see is people looking for ways to discover music in different places.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a lot more choices than there were back then. I mean, I talk to people now, a lot of young people in bands, and they were like, I used to videotape VHS. I'd tape the show and watch it on Monday morning or Monday night, or I'd stay up and get in trouble for my parents, or I'd just stay up and watch it at college. But, there's a lot of options now. I mean, obviously with the internet, with social media, with streaming services, with podcasts, everything that's out there, you're a smaller piece of the overall pie.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think the thing that makes it important for everyone is that because it is specialized, it is a specialized place, whether it's 120 or websites like Pitchfork, because it's a place to go and find new music, or if there's like a metal site or whatever genre of music you love, if it's a trusted site, it's about curation. It's about where you can go and hear things and trust the people that are telling you to check out certain artists. So it's important.
Well, it goes back to what you said before about it. You said it felt strange in some ways to refer to it as a brand, but it really is. I mean, that's the most accurate term that you're looking for. So when people are looking at that brand for it, again, as you said, there's the legacy of the bands that broke out in the 90s and, many of whom were featured on there.
Some in the 80s, too, before I hosted
it,
right?
In the 80s,
Dave
yeah.
Area.
Yeah,
Dave was